Welcome back here to the KGGF studios here on this Wednesday morning as we continue our conversations with Wendy Powell and Jacob Weber with the K-State Research and Extension offices. Wendy, Jacob, thanks so much for joining us as we continue our conversations. Again, you can listen to the first segment online at kggfradio.com. It's underneath the community tab. You can listen to it podcast style. Or if you do have any questions for Jacob or Wendy, 620-251-6909, and we'll get you on. And they will do their best to answer any questions that you have. So we were talking with Wendy a little bit about flood-soaked grain, as well as kind of the identification between what would be the kind of the difference between contaminated, between something you might be able to salvage. I think that's a good place to start. Would you have to take it someplace to get it tested, or what is kind of your first giveaway that it may be contaminated besides it coming out of a lake or a river or something that you don't manage yourself?
Other than monitoring visually, there's not a whole lot that we can test, or just because there could be so many different things. If you're concerned about one specific toxin, sure, there's probably a test out there that we can figure out how to identify that, if there's going to be a concern or not. But by and large, a visual will be sufficient there.
Yeah, muddy, kind of mossy, kind of whichever, whether it comes from a, like you said, lake or a river that you don't manage yourself, something that comes away from your land, pasture, wherever it may be, is most likely going to be contaminated. So let's talk about good ways of disposal if that does happen. Something, again, you had mentioned that you might be able to salvage by drying out, but say that this isn't salvageable, how can you dispose of it?
Sure. So, again, I want to reiterate that time is of the essence there. So if you've got wet stuff that you do want to save, then just make sure that gets dried out quickly. So some options for disposing of, you can compost. So that's going to be where you pile everything up and then you turn it. You will turn the pile, and you can do that. You know, gardeners are very familiar with that. Jacob probably has lots to say about composting. But when we're talking about really large piles of forage or really large piles of grain, it's going to take like a skid loader or something much larger equipment to turn that to get the effect of the composting. And you certainly don't want to just let it sit in a pile forever. That's not composting. That's just a pile of unusable forage.
Exactly. Just kind of taking up space in your yard at that point.
Yes.
Yeah. Good manure spreader.
There you go.
Put it on there and flip it out in the field. Yep.
So. And that is the next option I was going to throw out there is land application. with the rain that we've gotten, land application immediately is probably going to be a problem. So if you're wanting to get that spread, certainly you can go ahead and throw it in the manure spreader and wait till the fields dry out. I do have lots of information on application rates, so it would depend on what the forage or grain is, and that might be a fertilizer option for you. You know, as lemons, there's the lemonade for you.
There you go. Silver lining somewhere in there, right?
Yes. Yes. So it would depend on what you're applying, and I can help you with that if somebody wants to call in or just call into the office, and I'll be happy to visit with you individually about that specific grain and your specific pastures. The other option is going to be burning, and it's going to be kind of difficult to burn wet grain, but if it's forage, hay, then you can certainly take advantage of that option and just try to get rid of it. Keep in mind there, smoke dispersion, smell, if you're going to be close to any other dwelling or any other families that might be affected by that.
Yeah, you throw anything with heavy amounts of moisture onto a fire, it's going to smoke and smoke and smoke. Just keep going and going. So keep that in mind. You know, we've talked about this as to kind of wind direction. Be a good neighbor, really. Just be a do it justice. Or, you know, if it's if you're next to a major highway, make sure it's not just pumping out and blinding people on that highway by any means. But, you know, just kind of common courtesy with the burning.
Yes.
And things. So a couple of other options as well, as I'm sure you guys at any point, if anybody out there, I'm sure some of our listeners right now, especially with the abundance of rain, almost 8.5 inches through this point of May. Here in Coffeyville specifically, I know there's some areas even north of us, Labette County, I think there's some areas that got a little bit worse than us. And even over in Chautauqua County, some areas that may have gotten worse than us. So if you have any questions or whichever, a good number to call or any extension office probably is the place to go. So or online as well. So some good information as well. Listen back to these interviews as Wendy has been giving us some good tips here. So again, disposal of any, you know, flood soaked grain or other items. Any final notes that you wanted to give for our listeners out there?
Yeah. So it might be a good idea to go ahead and take some pictures of any damage that you have forage or grain wise. And for that matter, any flooding damage that you see, it's always good to keep records. Certainly if you can do time stamped photos, that are, those are the best, or just good records in general, you know, the quantity that you're dealing with, the quality that you thought it was, especially if you had had it tested and you can document the quality that of your forage or your grain, and then how much quality and quantity, and then photos. And those could be used for insurance purposes or just production records in general.
Absolutely. All right. So, well, Jacob, we'll kind of shift our focus over to this. I know an abundance of rain, in my opinion, would hopefully wash these away from the sidewalks.
Yeah.
But you've been getting a lot of calls recently about black ants.
Little and, black
quite
ants.
Quite a bit of them.
They invade homes, and they love sugars or anything in the kitchen and even the bathroom. They'll find things that they like.
Yep.
And they're just a nuisance. They're not necessarily real serious on contaminating like maybe a cockroach would, but they are difficult to control, difficult to eradicate. And so I've personally developed some regimens for controlling black ants, those little black ants, but sometimes it doesn't work. Excuse me. The of course, the baits do work, those that contain sodium tetraborate, for example. That particular material is very toxic to ants, but you have to keep in mind that how the ants forage and feed and eat, and they have to take the material back to the nest and then feed it to the developing offspring. And that's how you destroy them or control them, eradicate them. You'd have to feed them the bait probably up to 3 to 4 weeks before you finally kill that particular nest. And you may have several different nests visiting the house. So you're going to have to feed them and be persistent with feeding them. Put fresh bait out every day. The bait is a little syrup material. And as long as you have little ants coming and visiting the bait, keep feeding them. Eventually they stop coming because that's when the nest is dead. And it does take a period of time. The other option that I have developed personally is called search and destroy. And that takes a little bit of time. But you're looking for the trail of ants, and they typically are coming from outside. You follow the trail back as best you can, and then you look for where the nests typically are going to be, and usually it's going to be in a pile of leaves under a pot, a flower pot, wherever you find it. Try to locate the nest outdoors. Most of them are going to be outdoors. Sometimes they're not outdoors. Sometimes they're in between the wall spaces or maybe up in a rain gutter. So it's difficult sometimes to find it, but when you do find it, you take a long little can of aerosol spray, ant spray, and you annihilate the nest. That works. But then all of us be looking out for the ant nests because they're going to be a bunch of them.
Yeah.
With all this wet weather, they just love this wet weather. Yeah, they don't wash away.
Yeah, well, and one thing, it was we just had just a small, you know, we just found a couple of them by any means. And then we had bought those little things you buy at a hardware store. They're like little huts. And it does require them to go in. But then when they go in, they grab the food, take it out, and take it to the nest. We found that to be the most you know, useful option in our opinion, but it's always probably for some people, for some it's very, you know, gross or disgusting, but fun a little bit to maybe go out and just take out the nest by themselves. But I have learned just off of personal use, yeah, to take out the nest, because like you had said, there could be multiple, whether it's inside or out, there could be multiple around your house. So if you go out there with a can of Raid, you know, yeah, you took care of the problem right now, but in 15 minutes, there's still thousands of ants over there. So it really doesn't do too much.
One of the least effective methods of trying to control the little black ants is called a barrier spray. It just really doesn't do the job, because the material does do a good job of controlling some nuisance pests. It's more of a contact spray, but it also has residual. But the ants are not going to stop and feed on the residual, not necessarily. Once it dries, they just walk right over it. And it does kill the ones that it does get sprayed on directly, but that's just a very small portion of the entire nest. And those ants that are lost are quickly replaced. Reproduction is very rapid in a thriving ant colony. Barrier sprays are those that you spray along the foundation and out, usually 4 to 6 feet away from the foundation. They have to be reapplied frequently, and I have not heard any positive reports of those being able to control the little black ants.
That's interesting, because you had mentioned, you know, once it dries up, then it doesn't necessarily really even affect the ant, like, at all.
They walk over it.
Yeah, they just go over it. I mean, this wouldn't be something, you know, and I just use this as a term because it's something you see on TV, like the Orchid Man. They go around and spray. That wouldn't be the same as like a can of Raid by any means, right?
No.
Okay, that's what
not.
I figured. And then Raid's just more of like the on-contact killer compared to as a preventative.
There are some other materials like diatomaceous earth, which is a very abrasive material, can be sprinkled along the wall boards. I don't suggest this particular material because it is abrasive and it can damage finishes, and it kills by abrading the ant's body, and so that they kind of dry up, kind of like bleeding to death. But they don't bleed; they just and it kills other insects too. But it is kind of a messy material. You can put it outdoors along the foundation. That would work outdoors, but it's quickly dissipated into the soil, and it's not, in my opinion, terribly effective on controlling little black ants. Other materials, there are some anecdotal materials like hedge balls cut into slices and laid under the foundation of the house or something like that.
Well, as cynical as it may sound, it sounds like the best option is to take the poisonous food back to the young ones due to the heavy reproduction rate in with little black ants. So if you do have any issues with that, like Jacob had fed, it might take a couple weeks, but if you consistently feed them and also feed them something that they can take back and probably won't be so good for their young ones is where you're going to take out the nest. So again, Jacob Weber and Wendy Powell joining us here on this Wednesday morning. Guys, I really appreciate it. Any final notes that either of the two of you had to get out for our listeners?
I hope the sun keeps shining.
Seriously, my goodness.
I need to get my lawn mowed.
My goodness. I feel for all of the lawn mowing businesses out there right now. They've probably been out of work for 20 days, and then they're not going to be out of work for the next 3 months dries up.
Put all that lawn hay up and have lots of round bales to replace those that got water soaked.
I'll be happy to forage test those for you.
There you go. There you go. And again, head online for K-State Research and Extension. Get any of these numbers for any of your local extension offices. And you can listen back to these interviews online at the KGGF Radio website, kggfradio.com. Wendy, Jacob, thanks so much. And we'll talk to K-State next Wednesday.
Thanks for hosting us.
It's the Mighty 690 KGGF.